call the first case of the day, USA versus Leon.
Good morning, John Frizzell for Julio Leon. This case presents the issue of whether the plain language of Sentencing Guideline 2D1.1A in the context of a money laundering conviction in determining the money laundering guideline requires that the district court reduce the offense level if the defendant is a minor participant to the drug trafficking, underlying drug trafficking activity under 2D1.1A, or whether application note 2C of 2S1.1 precludes the specific offense characteristic reduction. And the argument...
Counsel, let me ask you before you get to that. The guidelines say that we're applying, say, if I'm correct, if the defendant is convicted under drug trafficking statute and the offense of conviction establishes that death or serious bodily injury resulted from the use of substance. Is that the guideline that we're applying?
No. It's the one that establishes the base of offense level, which cross-references the drug quantity table. And then it says and it gives the base offense level there, and then it says if the defendant is a minor participant, then reduce by, it depends on the base offense level, but it goes from 2 to 4 levels, I believe. And in this case, it would have been 4 levels, because the district court found he was both a minor participant to the drug trafficking activity and the money laundering activity.
But before we even get there, I'm wondering if the guideline that the judge applied initially was the correct one. Is there any evidence that there was any death or serious bodily injury? Is that the guideline that was applied? And is there such evidence in this case, or was there such an allegation made?
That was not the guideline that was applied, and I'm not aware of any evidence of that.
Okay.
And the government's argument is that the application note 2C precludes a defendant who is a minor participant to the underlying drug trafficking offense from receiving the benefit of 2D1.1A, the reduction to the base offense level under that provision. But application note 2C provides that the in determining the money laundering guideline, any Chapter 3 adjustments shall be determined on the basis of the defendant's conduct in the money laundering offense. First, the 2D1.1A is not a Chapter 3 adjustment. It's a Chapter 2 specific instruction on how to apply the offense level. Second, the application note C, when it refers to the determining the applying Chapter 3 only on the basis of the defendant's conduct in in the money laundering offense, that's limited to how you determine the money laundering offense guideline, and it's related to, it says when you're applying Chapter 3 adjustments, apply them only to the money laundering conduct to determine this offense level. But it does not preclude determining what the offense level is under Chapter 2 to the underlying offense. And in a case cited by in the government's brief, it's a Sixth Circuit case, United States v. Anderson, the court in footnote number 5 said that although the defendant was not eligible for being a minor participant in the money laundering conviction, she was a minor participant to the drug trafficking conduct, and that she therefore did merit the reduction under 2D1.1A. And this doesn't result in double counting because you only determine the base offense level of 2D1.1A by using the Chapter 3 reference of whether they're a minor participant or any other aggravating, well, under 2D1.1A, only whether they're a minor participant. You don't then give them a double dip and allow them to get two additional points off for being a minor participant. You only count it to determine that base offense level. And then you plug that into the money laundering guideline. And then you use the money laundering guideline in their conduct related to the money laundering to determine if they merit a minor participant or any other Chapter 3 adjustments. But it doesn't result in any double counting because the defendant's not getting any Chapter 3 reductions for the drug trafficking count. It's only the adjustment to the base offense level under Chapter 2. And then you just plug that number in to the money laundering, and you can give them a roll in the offense adjustment under that. But there is no double counting because of the way that Chapters 2 and 3 are distinct. And I can see that this issue wasn't preserved in the district court by the objections of trial counsel, but because it's the plain reading of the guideline provisions, the error in the application of determining the base offense level under Chapter 2, 2D1.1 was plain error because it was inconsistent with the plain language of the guideline, and it did result in a substantially longer sentence because he would have received an additional four-level reduction under the base offense level Chapter 2. So there was clear because of the plain language, and it also affected the substantial rights because of the...
Now, the fourth prong of clear error says it has to be seriously affect the fairness, integrity, and public reputation of the judicial proceedings. And in this case, he got a downward departure of one-third. So do you think in light of the fact that he got a one-third downward departure, that it meets that fourth prong of seriously affecting the fairness, integrity, and public reputation of the judicial proceedings?
Yes, Your Honor, because that four-level reduction would be a very large reduction to his offense. And I can't remember the guideline range, what it would be, but it does make a big difference. And if the guidelines had been calculated correctly, the judge would have, on the basis of the government's motion, granted the downward departure from that offense level.
So what do you think is the difference in sentence? I know you don't know the guidelines, but what would have been the difference? If we accept your argument, how much less time would he have gotten? Are we talking 6 months? Are we talking 3 years?
It's years. It was years. Because the four levels made a big difference, because would have been a four-level decrease. And that, and I don't know the numbers, but I remember it made a big difference. I believe his sentence was 150 months. And if he had gotten the four levels off prior to the application of the even of the 5K1 motion, because his offense level initially was 293 to life, I believe, so it was up towards the top, where each point off makes a bigger difference than it does when you get down towards the bottom of the guideline range. So I apologize, I don't know the numbers, but I do remember it did make a significant difference.
You weren't representing him at the district court level?
No, Your Honor. And on the sentencing issue, I'll concede that that I can't establish that the under plain error review that the harm affected his substantial rights. But unless there are any questions, I'll.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Frisell. We'll hear from the government. Ms. Bowery.
May it please the court, Loretta Berry for the United States. Before I reach the merits of the issue, I want to address a few points relative to the standard of review. As defense counsel has just conceded, this issue was never preserved below. Defense counsel never requested a four-level decrease under 2D1.1 to the calculation of the money laundering offense level. This issue is insufficiently vetted for this court's review under anything other than plain error under Chavez-Hernandez. And as this court well knows, it's a well-recognized principle in the Fifth Circuit that where no Fifth Circuit precedent exists on an issue, it cannot be plain error. Turning to the merits, under the money laundering calculation, if this court will look at pages 15 and 16 of the government's brief, there's a chart which sets out the district court's calculation of the money laundering guideline. The court began with 2S1.1, which is the money laundering guideline, to determine the base offense level. Now, that guideline refers the district court to the offense under which the funds were derived, which in this case is the drug guideline, which is 2D1.1. In response to Judge Prado's question, 2D1.1 governs all of the drug offenses in this case. Subsections A1 through A4 deal with if bodily injury occurred. Now, subsection A5 states that if there's no bodily injury, then that's the subsection that you look to, and that's what the district court referred to. So the court referred then to the drug quantity involved in this offense and found that it was 38. That's at record 309, supplemental record, in the sealed transcript, record page 7. There was no dispute about this offense level. The court then applied the specific characteristic of the money laundering guideline under 2S1.1 and added two levels because this was a 1956 conviction. That's at record 209 and supplemental record 8. The court then reached an adjusted base offense level of 40. That's at supplemental record page 8. At this point, consistent with the application note 2C of 2S1.1, the court then applied the Chapter 3 adjustments for money laundering, which is exactly precisely what that guideline commentary directs the district court to do. The court then applied the following Chapter 3 adjustments. He adjusted by subtracting three levels for acceptance of responsibility for the money laundering offense. That's at record 309. And subtracted two levels for being a minor participant in the money laundering offense. That's at record 311 and the statement of reasons, page 1. So the total offense level became 35. The district court's approach was consistent with the guideline commentary application note 2C, which again directs the district court only for Chapter 3 adjustments to apply the adjustments in Chapter 3 for the money laundering offense. This is also consistent with the Sixth Circuit's approach to this issue in Anderson, and as well as the Tenth Circuit's approach in Keck. Now, the Sixth Circuit in Anderson directly, both of these cases directly address the interplay between 2S1.1, the money laundering guideline, 2D1.1, which is the drug calculation, the drug guideline, and the commentary, the application note 2C of 2S1.1, which is the money laundering guideline. And the court in Anderson, in the body of the opinion, in the merits of the opinion, stated that notwithstanding subsection 1B1.5C, where this application note 2S1.1A applies, any Chapter 3 adjustments relate to the money laundering guideline, not the drug guideline. And 1B1.5C states that when there are two guidelines and they're cross-referenced, the district court under the subsection A is supposed to apply all of the base offense and all the specific offense characteristics of the cross-reference guideline, with the exception of subsection C, where it says, except as otherwise expressly provided, the Chapter 3 adjustments of the cross-reference guideline are applied. So in this case, defense counsel referenced footnote 5 of Anderson, which in Anderson was the facts were a little different because the defendant only pled guilty to the money laundering guideline. And after the court went through all the merits of the issues, in a footnote, the court stated that if the defendant had pled guilty to money laundering and the drug offense, then he would have gotten an additional reduction under the drug offense calculation. But since it was just money laundering, the court went ahead and did not follow the commentary and gave him the additional reduction. But fortunately, that's not the situation that we have here, because the defendant here pled guilty to both the money laundering and the drug calculation. So when the court was determining the drug calculation, he did get the mitigating role that he's seeking now.
But the drug calculation was what, between 50 and 150 kilograms? Is that how we came to the number?
Are you asking me about how they determine the base offense for the
yes.
drug quantity?
Yes.
Well, in the PSR, under the drug quantity for the money laundering count, it was 38. And then for the drug offense.
Well, how did he get to 38? What was the amount of drugs?
For the money laundering, it was all of the relevant conduct involved in the drug offense. It was all of the cocaine and all of the marijuana. And it also pulled in count one as relevant conduct, which was dismissed by the government.
So what was the total amount of drugs on the table? What was the amount of drugs that was used to figure out the table?
I believe it was, for the money laundering count, I think it was 149 kilograms, I believe.
Okay.
But there was no, it seems like it should have been more, and it seems a little strange that the drug calculation for the drug quantity of the drug offense is 36. It seems like it should have been the same, because it seems like the drug quantity for all of it should have been the same. But again, there was no objection by either party that the 38 was the correct starting point in terms of quantity, how they got there. The PSR, there was no objection to how that was calculated. I don't know the exact number, I'm sorry. As I said, I have the record sites for where neither party objected to that 38 number, and that was based on quantity, but I don't know the exact number, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Okay.
This issue is also consistent with the Tenth Circuit's approach and how they looked at this application note C2. The court in the Tenth Circuit, in looking at this issue, held that the application note 2C refers exclusively to the Chapter 3 money laundering adjustments. Now, that doesn't preclude a district court from awarding other adjustments under 2D1.1 or 2S1.1. This maintains consistency in the guidelines and also avoids double counting of the Chapter 3 adjustments. Under the defense's view of this guideline under 2S1.1, it would render the application note 2C totally meaningless. And as this court is aware, the Sentencing Commission has specifically put in the guideline commentary for a reason. And I think if the court looks at 1B1.5C, where it states that for a cross-reference guideline, the district court must apply even the Chapter 3 adjustments, except as otherwise expressly provided. And then if the court refers to the application note 2C, this is that precise situation where it states that when you're calculating the money laundering guideline, you have to apply the money laundering facts for the Chapter 3 adjustments. If there's no further questions, I respectfully ask that the judgment be affirmed. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Back to you, Mr. Frizzell.
I did want to clarify that when I was conceding the issue of affecting substantial rights under the plain error analysis, I was referring to my second issue regarding the court not adequately explaining the reasons for its sentence under 3553A. I wasn't addressing the application of the guideline issue.
So you think that a judge needs to explain when there's a downward departure, why his downward departure is what it is and shouldn't be bigger or smaller, that there has to be some explanation for why they decided how big the downward departure should be?
In certain circumstances, under Rita and in this circuit's opinion in Mondragon-Santiago, when the defendant makes arguments, additional arguments for a variance, I read that as when the defendant makes those arguments, then the judge does have to address them. And the failure to address them is error, and it is plain error, but it, under plain error analysis, I'd have the burden to prove that had he explained the reasons for a sentence, he would have granted my client relief and lowered the sentence, which I can't meet that burden here. On the issue of plain error as applied to the application of the guidelines, this court, I believe it, the case is United States v. Price, but I'm not positive. But it has said under plain error analysis that the two guideline applicable guideline ranges are not overlapping, that will be plain error. And in this case, because of the amount of the reduction to the base offense level that would have resulted from a four-level reduction to the under 2D1.1, that it would satisfy the prejudice prong under United States v. Price. I believe that's the name of the case. And as far as to address the government's arguments regarding Anderson and Craig, those cases are not inconsistent with my position, because the guidelines treat Chapter 2 and Chapter 3 separately. Even under 1B1.5, specific offense characteristics, base offense level, that's described in 1B1.5B1, but Chapter 3 adjustments are described separately in 1B1.5C. So they're described separately in separate guideline provisions under Chapter 1B1.5. And a Chapter 2 adjustment is not the same thing as a Chapter 3 adjustment. This is a Chapter 2 adjustment to applying the entire guideline, when the court, all the courts that apply this agree that the guideline for the underlying offense is to be applied in its entirety. And the 2D1.1A5 is the offense guideline. It is not itself a Chapter 3 adjustment. And even if a defendant receives if the defendant receives the specific offense characteristic adjustment of the reduction to the base offense level, they're still punished more severely as a money laundering, for a money laundering offense, because when it's a direct money laundering offense where the defendant is engaged in both the underlying conduct and the money laundering, they automatically receive the 2-point increase under 1956. If it's a 1957 conviction, they get a 1-point. But under either case, they are going to always be sentenced more severely. So the fact that they can receive the specific offense characteristic reduction under 2D1.1 does not defeat the purposes of the increased sentences under the money laundering guideline. And thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Frizzell. As noted the other day, you are court-appointed counsel. We appreciate your service to the court in taking on these cases and doing a fine job. Thank you. Thank you.